One day the bottom will drop out. Yes, one day the bottom will drop out.
FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ray Porter with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, July 16th. For the first time in years, the Florida Democratic Party will provide election funding for several local competitive races this fall. Under the Take Back Local program launched 2 years ago, city and school board candidates in Sarasota and Manatee who will get an extra boost are Sarasota County School Board candidate Beth Mayberry, Manatee County School Board candidate Chantel Wilford, and Sarasota City Commission candidate Flo Entler. None of these races are partisan. The candidates receive direct funding, strategic support from the party to help with messaging or voter data, and more resources to help connect directly with voters. Arcadia residents this week reported seeing several U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, arrests in their neighborhoods. According to a WUSF news report, the residents reported seeing immigration agents in Arcadia on Tuesday. Videos of agents wearing police and ICE vests and face masks also began popping up on social media. WUSF spoke with eyewitnesses who said customers at the restaurant La Placita Mexicana were targeted by immigration authorities asking for their papers. The restaurant is a staple in the neighborhood. Witnesses told WUSF that an elderly gentleman close to 80 was shoved into an ICE van among several other patrons. There have been 3 deaths in the past week involving encounters with ICE agents following shootings in Texas and Maine, and a man in St. Augustine running from ICE agents who was hit by a truck. Those deaths prompted ICE to pause non-urgent vehicle stops. On Monday, a video of masked agents in the agricultural community of Immokalee, about 170 miles southwest of Arcadia, was also posted to Facebook by the immigrant rights group Unidas Immokalee. The National Hurricane Center is tracking a tropical system in the Gulf of Mexico that could impact Sarasota. A low-pressure area currently has a low 20% chance of developing over the next 7 days. But regardless of development, the system could bring flooding rain to the southeast early next week. In its Wednesday, July 15th outlook, the National Hurricane Center said the disturbance has a limited chance of further strengthening over the next 7 days as it moves slowly northeast across the Gulf or near the southeastern U.S. coast. Colorado State storm forecasters said last week only 9 named storms are expected this year, the lowest tally in a decade. But residents and visitors should remember that even one major storm impacting our area can still be a big problem. And finally, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and his push to declare the Council on American Islamic Relations a terrorist organization has hit some delays and potential roadblocks. Florida's chief of domestic security wants to designate the council, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Antifa as domestic terrorist organizations. But nearly 2 weeks later, that recommendation has yet to go into effect, and there is no clear timeline when it will be, according to a filing in federal court on Monday. The Southern Poverty Law Center, along with the ACLU, the ACLU of Florida, and 2 other legal groups representing the council, filed a lawsuit the day after DeSantis' press conference challenging that designation. This has been Ray Porter with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, July the 16th.
Welcome to The Detail. I am your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Well, it's election season, and some really important elections are happening on August 18th. August 18th, you're going to be able to, regardless of your party affiliation. So a lot of people, I always remind people, August is a huge month for local elections. No matter what party you're in, it's not just about primaries. One of those races is our school board race. And actually, there are 3 school board seats that are going to be decided, could potentially be decided in August if the candidate gets more than 50% of the vote. My guest today is Frank DiCicco. He is no stranger to running for office. Mr. DiCicco ran in 2016 for county commission. We know each other from way back then. Frank, thanks so much for joining me today. You've got a lot going on, and we've got a lot to talk about.
Well, thank you for having me, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And I appreciate you coming. You've lived here for 30 years.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So for people who don't know much about you. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about where you lived before, your family, your life experience, your work history. Tell us about yourself.
So I was actually born in Anchorage, Alaska, back in 1964. And my father was in the Army, and then he's there for a few years. Then we moved to New Jersey, where I spent about 28 years of my life.
Where in New Jersey?
Mahwah, up in the northern part of Jersey, on the New York State border.
Is that like a factory outlet place,
actually,
or is that Secaucus?
Secaucus. Actually used to be the Ford Motor Company plant was there back in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
And then I moved down to Sarasota in 1996, and I've been in Sarasota County ever since.
What brought you here?
Well, I actually had an opportunity. My wife at the time was a pharmaceutical rep for a big company, and they had an opening down here in Bradenton, and she called me. She goes, my God, we could actually move to Sarasota, because we used to vacation here for years. Mm-hmm. I had family down here. And when that opportunity came about, we took it, and that's what brought us here.
Like most people.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Just the beauty of the place. You know, you have children.
Mm-hmm, I do.
And you have two in public schools?
So I have two boys that are mine with my my former wife, Danielle.
Uh-huh.
They are 17 and 18 now. My oldest one, he just graduated Suncoast Polytech in May.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger one, he's 17, he's going into high school. He's going into senior in high school this year at Polytech. And they were in the school system all the way back from pre-K.
Okay.
So,
and is that because you have two kids? Do you have other kids?
Well, I have the stepdaughter, Logan, who you met when I was campaigning.
Okay.
So that was Danielle's daughter from her first marriage.
Uh-huh.
And then also Tiffany, who was my foster daughter. So we had two teenage girls, and they're older. They're in their 20s now.
Okay.
And then the boys, they were about 8 years younger than the girls. So we had a full house there for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So four kids.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a parent in the public schools. You know, your kids, one's graduated, one's still in school. And why are you running?
You know, it's really interesting. My younger son is, he's a little bit more outgoing. And he told me about something that I wasn't aware of after it had happened. He had said, hey, Dad, I want to talk with you. He said, my friends and I, we went down to speak at a school board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I said, really? I said, what was going on? He said, well, they were thinking about taking Suncoast Polytech and moving it out of its campus to some of the other schools that were underutilized.
Yeah.
And he said that was really upsetting because, first of all, you know, they had their labs there. I mean, they're a huge robotics competitor worldwide. They've won first place years and years over. And he said, but a lot of us also go to, they dual enroll into SCF, which is right there. So it's like a perfect thing.
That is good.
Really. And my older son, he's there. Yeah.
So college credit in high school.
Oh, yeah. In fact, my older one, he's starting up again in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be done like in a year and a half. He'll have his 2-year degree. I mean, it's perfect, you know.
Yeah.
And the younger one wanted to do the same thing.
Yeah.
So they went down and basically said, you guys are looking at headcount and square footage. And, you know, you don't understand what the community is there and what you're going to be doing. So they spoke anyway. Terry Connor and the board agreed to not do it. And he said, you know, I'm so glad we're able to do that because I'm hearing now that the board meetings are going to be in the morning and we wouldn't have been able to have gone and maybe wouldn't have our school anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I said, you know, what is this about? And that really, that one about changing the board meetings to 10 in the morning, and I always say it in a loving way. I understand that sometimes there's reasons why things are done. But in the end, parents, students, and teachers have a right to be at those meetings. 6 o'clock,
mm-hmm.
Tuesday nights, twice a month. I'm adamantly for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one thing that I said when I first filed in March. Some people will say that they've been saying it all along. I challenged them to find somewhere. I seriously, when I got interviewed, when I first announced,
mm-hmm.
I said that was the number one thing that I wanted to change because I don't think it's fair. As a parent, I can't take off from work
mm-hmm.
to go sit in a boardroom all day. It didn't make, and I understand,
yeah.
I understand there's reasons why, but I think you have to address the reasons and not just make a change like that.
No, I agree. I mean, the whole point of the school board is that it's for the public. It seemed to me the reason it was moved to 10 a.m. was to reduce the ability mm-hmm. of the public to participate because the school board was getting such a hard time.
Right, but you have to be, there's ways to fix decorum, and we all know that. And there's positive ways to do it without being negative. Mm. But I also understand that sometimes, you know, when things get really, really bad, you have to do something. But I even heard school board member Rob Marinelli speaking recently about it. I was actually being interviewed, and they said it was a temporary thing. And it's the first thing I'm going to do when I'm elected. I'm going to vote
it's
to move that.
A temporary thing?
Well, yeah, it wasn't something that's supposed to be permanent, is what was said.
See, but that's but the nose and the camel's nose in the tent. You know, they'll just, oh, we're doing this temporary, but the reality
the
is they never change it.
It has to change. Yeah. If it's not changed prior, then the new board needs to change it. The good news is everybody who's running has all agreed that it's a good idea and they would do it. I don't think there's going to be any pushback on that. So I would say whatever the first board meeting that the elected candidate, the elected new board members are at, they can vote to change it. So the next meeting would be back at night.
Back at 6 p.m.
And twice
a
month.
So I would say school board decorum really started going off the rails, or, you know, I would say the meetings became really contentious during COVID. And, you know, it was for a town that has, frankly, one of the most sophisticated medical communities for a community this size. And professionally, I can speak to this because I called on medical communities in Hawaii, in Pittsburgh, in the D.C. area. I'm very familiar with high-level academic medicine. And then I called on Naples to Bradenton, out to Lakeland. So Sarasota has a really sharp, really high-level standard when it comes to our medical community. And yet at the school board, the shrieking and the havoc over COVID, because this was a disease we were in the throes of understanding the science. You've had some, I don't know if you want to go there, and I totally respect if you don't, but, you know, you've been impacted by COVID. I've been in, my dad died of COVID. So
I'll share it with you.
Okay.
You know, I got sick and it came on very, very quickly, and it was just before the Delta variant had really taken off. So it was in July of 2021. And I went to urgent care, and I also had a lot. I used to get sinus infections and allergy related things. So we just kind of thought it was that. It got worse. And long story short, I remember it was on a Tuesday. I just woke up. I couldn't breathe, and Danielle rushed me to the hospital. And I think it was on a Wednesday rather. And, the doctor said, you know, you've got COVID, you got double pneumonia, you're in complete respiratory failure, your oxygen thing is like at 62.
Wow.
And he said, the only reason I'm not going to put you on a vent is because the person that just died in the intensive care unit we had on a vent, we're going to try something else. And turned around and looked at my wife and said, listen, you need to go home and start making arrangements because it doesn't look good for him. I don't think he's going to make it. I heard those words. It was the scariest thing. I'm like, I was fine a few days ago. And 2 weeks in intensive care, and then 3 months of trying to recover from that when I got home. Yeah, it was a very, very impactful thing. So when it comes to COVID, it's very personal to a lot of people. I mean, I think people should have the right, you know, to deal with their situations on their own. But it impacted me pretty significantly.
Yeah.
And I would have to say probably a good 6 months before I kind of got out of that intensive care COVID fog, because you really, it's real. I mean, it's not, that's not BS. I mean, you honestly, you don't, you're talking and you start forgetting about what you're talking about. It's like ridiculous. It was very, very scary.
Yeah.
And at the time, you know, I was in my late 50s. I'm thinking, oh my God, it's almost all over right now.
Yeah. So given that,
because
you've personally experienced this, and the big thing, and frankly, this is where, you know, somebody who's running for office, Michelle Posey, I've invited her on. I haven't heard back. I really don't expect to. But, you know, she was at hospital board meetings popping off about, you know, civil rights, COVID, you guys are doing it wrong. And then she'd run to school board meetings and do the same thing. And I thought it was shockingly irresponsible the way the issue was politicized, because the whole mask issue, you're wearing it for the other person. You're wearing it to mitigate transmission. Nothing's 100%, but, you know, when we're breathing and talking, there's a plume of air vapor around us that gets shared. And I'm curious because, you know, you're a Republican. You've been endorsed by the Republican mm-hmm. Party.
Correct.
This is a nonpartisan race.
It is.
But that to me was when the school board really, I was like, what am I watching? You know, it was so obvious the divide between this medical world that exists here and what was happening in public schools. So, you know, as a candidate, what was your take? Because you weren't at those meetings, so you didn't go on the record nope. talking about it. I'm sure it really wasn't probably on your radar that you'd be running for school board at some point.
Not 5 years later, no.
Yeah. So what do you make of all that? What do you think they did well, and what do you think that they didn't do well?
You know, during that time frame is when I was almost dying, so I didn't really pay attention to any of that.
Okay.
So when you talk about all of the different back and forths, I honestly didn't see it, and I'm not one to look at a couple of video clips to make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has to take responsibility for themselves. You just have to. And there's also following the law, following the spirit of the law, all of that. I can safely say, and I'll answer this question, if something like that happened again, and I was sitting in that seat, it's a tough decision because, you know, when you hear those words, I don't think you're going to make it.
Yeah.
It changes everything.
Yeah.
But it doesn't define you either. So I think we have to be grateful that we got through that disaster. Some of us didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are people I know that are still struggling with the long-term effects of it.
People who
are still living with that. You know, it's a scary time. And what's right, what's wrong, you know, who knows? The thing is, when something like that happens, God forbid, I hope it never does. But if anything else like that ever happened, I think we have a baseline of what to do and not to do. And everybody has to have an open mind, listen. And quite frankly, don't politicize it, because politics shouldn't dictate anything. And I'm not saying either side's right, wrong, or different, whatever. I don't want to say that, because like I said, when that was going on, I was literally watching a meter, or a monitor rather, in my hospital room, praying that it didn't go below 85, because at that point, it was pretty much on the other side of it. I said goodbye to my family, and that was the end. So.
Wow. Yeah.
It was a very, very tough time. So in all fairness, I wasn't there for any of it. So for me to comment on it, you know, Kath, you know me, I'll tell you how I feel.
I know.
I didn't see it firsthand. So I would prefer to just say, if it ever happened again, I'm going to sit in that seat. If I'm elected, I'm going to look in the eyes of everybody who's talking. And I'm going to make my decision based on what I feel is in the best interest of everybody.
But where would you know, the advice of the medical community was clear.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you're looking at everybody, but when you're looking at the doctor, are you going to go with him? Are you going to go?
Well, I look at it this way. I don't ask my doctor what his political affiliation is when he tells me he's going to save my life. I don't care. And he had a mask on that day, and so did I when I was in the hospital. It's a very touchy subject. And there are people I know who died from COVID. And I was lucky. I mean, I thank God every day that I made it through that, because it was something I was so not ever expecting. Yeah, I figured, okay, you get it, you get sick, it's miserable, but it attacked me like I have never ever been sick before in my life. And I was not there for any of the discussions that were going on during that point, because I was kind of trying to recover.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think that rather than let's looking at the past, because we should learn from the past. What I learned from the past is, let's not make it political. If something ever like this happens again, let's everybody work together and say, okay, what is the best? What's the advice we're getting? What should we be doing? What is our governor saying? What is the law saying?
There was a beer cozy.
A beer what?
There was merch. Okay?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
A beer cozy.
Right.
That DeSantis put out that said something like, your mask, you know, I'm not going to wear a mask because it gets in the way of drinking my beer. And it was his reelection campaign. So, I mean, if you're going
Did I say DeSantis or did I say the governor, Kathy?
Well, you said the governor, but that's who was the governor.
Well, but I said not in the past. Come on, Kathy, you know me better than that.
No, I know.
I said, let's fast forward to the future. We don't know who the governor is going to be. But again, the governor is going to make statements. The school board is going to have to deal with that. We have medical. Please, you know me better than that. I'm saying if we go to the future, we don't know what the future is or who's going to be involved, but we have to do it differently. Okay, so yeah. Let me finish?
No.
Okay, let me finish.
Yeah, I'll let
what I'm
you
saying
finish,
is but... once you have all those different people, all those people that are there in that room, all the information, then you can make a decision. And you know what? Right, wrong, or indifferent, at least own it. I made a good decision. I made a bad decision. It happens.
Yeah.
But I don't want to talk about a time frame that I literally have very little recollection of because I was in a fog for 6 months.
Yeah. So COVID began in
2020.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember March. My dad died in May. The whole summer of 2020, that was really when things were terribly, terribly off. So, you know, in that regard, that time frame, I think it's fair to say that you weren't impacted then.
And I wore a mask then, too, because I was scared like everybody else.
Okay. And so, the reason I just, for me, and the reason I do this show is, what are the facts? And it's very, especially with the school board, it's been really troubling to watch a forum where facts and, you know, it's education are supposed to be paramount. And we have been living through a time where we've had a board majority that, from where I sit, they don't care about facts. It's about political points. It's about drama. So, you know,
I will comment on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely drama and division, but they also do vote 5-0 on a lot of things too. They do agree on a lot as well. And I am proud of the fact that they do on certain issues that need to be addressed that affect the schools, the students, the teachers, the admin. They do seem to have a lot of 5-0 votes. So, you know,
that's good.
So it's fair to say that, yes? Okay, thank you.
I think it's fair to say that, but I also think it's fair to say that it's beyond, because you're talking about it in your campaign. We've got to stop the distraction.
Yes.
We've got to stop this drama. We've got to stop the grandstanding. So tell me your thoughts, because you had mentioned Suncoast Polytech and your boys being involved.
Yes.
Tell me your thoughts on the Schools of Hope and corporate charter schools.
Okay, well, Schools of Hope, I don't think it is fair for any for-profit business to come into our county, our buildings, our infrastructure, and be there for free. Dead set against it. And Terry Connor, I think, did a pretty good job at putting the brakes on that. I would vote. Mm-hmm. I would do everything. I would go to Tallahassee if I had to fight that, because we all pay to exist in our for-profit businesses. That was a money grab. I don't like that at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, I'm sorry, the other part of your question was these?
Schools of Hope, corporate charters, you know, just where you stand on.
Okay, so that's a great question.
Approving them.
Let's talk about school choice. I think it's great that I had a choice to say I live in one particular area of Sarasota, but my kids could go to Suncoast Polytech. I think that's fantastic. You have kids that want to go to certain schools because it specializes in athletics or the arts. I think school choice is the coolest thing. I didn't have that growing up. I had to go to this particular school, or I had to go to a Catholic all-boy high school, and it's my parents made me go to. So I wish
that explains
it explains a lot.
Yeah.
So I honestly love the idea of school choice. Now, in our school choice within our school system, we have charter schools, but they're part of our school system. My kids went to Island Village Montessori. So, yes. But now we have the for-profit charter schools and then the voucher program. So my concern with the voucher program is if a parent decides, let's say they have two kids, and they decide to send their two kids to a private school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They get that voucher. But if it doesn't work out in that private school, and they go back into public school, and I've asked about this, what is the mechanism for us to get that money back? Did it go to the school directly? Did it go to the parent? Does the parent have to give it back? Does the school just keep it because the student left while they all have mail? But they have waiting lists of kids to fill that seat. So the point of it is, I don't think it should just be, here's the money, go to the school that you want. I think that the money should be spoon-fed over the year, maybe quarterly.
Yeah, but that's a state.
Well, it is, but let's go to the state and fight it, because right now, how's it fair to the school to have a student? Because let's face it, if I could have gotten out of the the Catholic little boy high school I went to, I can assure you I would have done everything I could to get out of that, because I hated it. And I shouldn't say hated, that's a strong word. It was just not where I wanted to.
The nuns are tough.
Yeah, it was. Well, no.
Or was it the priests?
The priests and brothers,
yeah,
no.
Well, they've had their issues.
Yeah, well, let's not even
and
know that.
I say that, but you and I both grew up Catholic.
I know. Yeah. So what I'm saying is, my father would have been like, they're not giving me my money back. I paid it for the year, okay? But it was his money. In this particular case, I think there needs to be another line item that says, okay, this is public money that is coming over to your school. If that student doesn't stay there, we need to get that back. You have a waiting list. That's what I think should be addressed on that whole thing. Yes.
So public money, what are your thoughts about instituting the same requirements? Because charter schools, I'm talking about corporate charters.
Not the ones that are in the school system.
Well, theoretically, they're all in the system. But, no, I'm talking about, because the homegrown charter school, like the Island Montessori, that tends to be a whole different scene. This is a school that the community has come together to form, to meet a need. So that's kind of a separate bucket. However, in some ways, they're the same. You've got the corporate charter school, which is, you know, got the profit motive.
But they also get the vouchers.
Vouchers go to all these schools regardless. So the corporate charter school, you've got the real estate corporation they set up. They gouge, typically can charge up to 40% of the separate school nonprofit is paying up to 40% of the budget for rent, and those leases are bundled and sold on Wall Street as an investment instrument. So there's, you know, people, I harp on this a lot because the profit motive is beyond just the immediate corporation. Wall Street wants a guaranteed rate of return, and the biggest forces behind school privatization are, you know, corporate Wall Street, profit-hungry hedge funds that look at this as a guaranteed rate of return. The government is your best payer.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, having said that, shouldn't these charter schools have the same requirements? Shouldn't they have to report their data? Shouldn't they have to offer the same services? Shouldn't they have to have the same credentials if you're going to get public money? I mean, what you do as a private entity on your own when people are paying, you know, there's still standards there if you're going to call yourself a school. But if you're getting public tax dollars, would you work to institute those same standards, or do you think that it's okay the way it is, or is there a third option?
Well, here's the thing, and you know I'm not going to answer a question I don't really know the answer to.
Okay.
Everything that you've shared with me, I'm not 100% familiar with.
Okay.
And remember, I've just been exposed to this issue in March of this year, so I don't really know the mechanics that you just mentioned. But again, any public-private agreement that we've done throughout the county, there is accountability on both sides.
No, so, well, actually, I would say that absolutely is not true. And that's
are you talking
the
with
issue.
The schools, or are you talking
that there
about
is an
across
accountability
the board?
On both sides.
Are you talking about just the schools or in other projects?
Well, look at there's like Senka, the Benderson Park, that agreement. If you look at the SPAC in the city of Sarasota and the new Performing Arts Center.
So you're saying that there's not, it's not.
Absolutely not. Okay. What I'm saying is that there are forces like, you know, PAC donors that want to buy local government so they get the sweet deal. So there is an accountability. So they get the fire sale price on public land. So they.
Yeah, but you're touching on an area that you know I'm more intimate about from 10 years ago. Yeah, I'm not okay with certain groups getting a better deal than other groups, that you know that.
Well, so but, don't say there's accountability on both sides, because there's not.
But there needs to be.
Yeah, there does.
I mean, okay. You need to have accountability.
So
because
we're good with that.
I think so. Yeah. Because why not? I mean, mm-hmm. Look, if you're not hiding anything, right? I mean, seriously, there should be accountability. Because, again, you know, it's an issue that everything that you just discussed,
yeah.
I honestly don't have a lot of experience in, and I don't know. But, yes, it's for profit, and mm-hmm. they have a right to make a profit. And parents have a right to go there if they wish. The problem that I would like to see is why are so many of our kids, or parents rather, sending their kids outside of the school system? I think if the school can address, the school system itself can address mm-hmm. retaining our students, mm-hmm. offering, and they are doing a lot better. There yeah. are more programs mm-hmm. coming on. Because I will tell you, people do move to Sarasota for the school system. It's a top-rated school system. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I didn't have kids at the time when I moved here, but we like, wow, they got a really great school system. However, once they get here, something changes. And I think that we need to, rather than focusing on, okay, well, is this good, bad, or why are people in the first place even considering leaving? And if we can address some of those issues, mm-hmm. then we can get parents that may say, well, listen, we should be in our schools. Because I'll tell you, growing up in a private school system, there's some things that definitely molded me in a way, which yeah. discipline and respect for sure.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of other areas that did not exist that I missed out on being in a private school rather than a public school. And that's just coming from personal experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's perfectly legitimate that when people run for office, you can get a very good person who will make a good school board member who hasn't necessarily, as you're saying, well, like, you know, this is new to me.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be people who say, well, where have you been? Mainly because it's been such a time.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, even historically. So, you know, the whole Moms for Liberty thing, which you've got video of the founder of, well, the chapter president of Moms for Liberty, and one of her colleagues talking about how they were going to basically cause havoc in schools over masks. I mean, there's a video on about that. I'm just so it's really been an incredible time for a community that hasn't had that kind of controversy at the school board, mm-hmm. right?
But you know what? We can stop it now because there's going to be three new board members, regardless of who the seven people that are running.
Mm-hmm.
Three of us are going to either be on there or not on there. It's
yeah,
that
there's no incumbent.
There's no incumbent. Everything's going to change.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you know, school board members, Liz Barker and Tom Edwards will embrace whoever the new board members are, and
sure.
they can work together.
Yeah.
I think if we just say, okay, look, it's obviously there's a lot of things that have gone on in the last 5 years that are not so great. But I also look back, look at our country in 1860. We had a civil war, and we bounced back from that. Look at how great things became after that. So we can do it. We can fix it. And I shared with you earlier that I was on a dysfunctional HOA board for 7 years where nobody got along. And working together with the vice president that I had, I was a president, and we were able to really figure out what's the problems here and try to figure out how to address them rather than do foolish responses.
Yeah.
Get to the root of it and get people to start saying, okay, you know what? This is not a half bad idea. So the people who didn't like the board began to say, well, this is pretty cool because I'm benefiting from this. I know these things. I believe it in my heart. I wouldn't do this if I didn't think that.
Yeah. And so you're talking to a history major.
Okay.
So I have to take issue. Like, yeah, we had a civil war.
We did.
But I wouldn't say we bounced back.
Well,
you know,
we didn't divide.
That's going
way further. Yes, it took a long time.
I mean,
yeah, you're right.
It takes a long time,
yep.
Which is why I think voters, because let's face it, Bridget Ziegler's not running.
No, she's not.
But she didn't leave. She, you know, the reason she's still there is because we don't have a mechanism to remove her. And there is, I think, a deep concern for people who really have watched the school board,
mm-hmm.
people who really have been watching for five, mm-hmm. 6 years and have said, you know, this is not serving our kids. We've got funds leaving the public schools where there's no accountability, We've got a wing of the Republican Party who is actively trashing public education without foundation, really. They have a lot of talking points, but it's, you know, you can't do an apples-to-apples comparison.
But we also have the other side.
Well, let me finish now. My point is, I think people want to know. It's one thing to say you're going to end the drama, but I know for myself, and I think a lot of people out there, we really want to be sure.
Okay.
Like, we really, because anybody can say anything, and you're, you're a lovely guy.
Well, thank
but,
you.
You know,
thank
you. But I've known you for a while, and it's hard for me to, you know, I need to ask you some other questions.
I know.
Here.
I'm sure this is going to be more fun as this goes on today.
Yeah, yes, but I'm sitting here, Frank, like, this, there was a national effort, and there's a national effort, like, let's talk Vermillion. You know, what happened with Vermillion in Sarasota County Schools, and I can fill you in if you need me to. There's a national effort to privatize education. There's a national effort, and it's, you know, a cohort of powerful people who are looking to privatize schools, and we've seen them at work. And Bridget Ziegler was hired to be, like, the leadership council, I forget the name of it. And when her scandal came out, you know, they booted her. But we've had, you know, some pretty plugged-in national strategists here. And so, honestly, when I see a PAC that Eric Robinson is running, this Sarasota Families for Educational Excellence PAC, and they're endorsing you on their website, I don't feel good about that.
Well,
I'm really concerned about that.
And you know, we've talked about PACs in the past.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little control over their narratives. But we also have to look at the other side of the coin, because you need to be fair.
Yes.
You have your position that you feel the right is going in a certain direction, but you have to admit, the left has got their issues too.
Yes, they do.
And they definitely push some agendas, you know what I'm talking about, that upset a lot of people as well.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the problem. When you bring politics into the school board at the far divide that it was, and you start trying to politicize social issues, and you do all these things that we know never end well. We have this division. But here's the good news. I'm going to say it again. This ends August 18th. Well, not really. It ends in November when the people take over. You know what I'm saying? This whole thing is going to end.
I know. We just want to be sure. I think the community wants to be sure that the people that are elected are truly committed to ending it. And quite frankly, there are people running. Like, do I think Michelle Posey is going to end it?
Michelle Posey
was like a COVID wacko.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Kathy.
And
listen,
it was very detrimental.
I'm my own person. You do know that. And you
but
know
you're
that.
Running, you're,
well, I'm running because, yes.
But
because
that's what, you know, but this PAC is affiliating you with her.
Well, and again,
so that's why I asked.
We went through this 10 years ago.
Yeah.
PACs affiliate people all the time. There's a PAC that's attacking me right now, and technically they're affiliated with my opponent. I've never said a bad word about Megan Tinnam, and I never will.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to look at her and blame her for what's going on, but you know what? It's just this is the way it is.
I know that.
Here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I know you know me. The listeners might not, but I am my own person.
Yes.
Okay. I don't take anything from anybody. I do what I feel is right.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to ever tell me what to do. And you know that, because running against Mike 10 years ago was really something people thought was going to be a complete disaster. We did
Mike
really
Moran.
Good. Mike Moran. Yeah,
so
we ran against
that.
So
you ran against him in 2016.
Yes.
Yeah, and the Republican Party was not happy.
They weren't really. They didn't endorse anybody. They didn't endorse anybody. But yeah, a lot of the donors went with Mike and not me. But you know what? We still did good.
Yeah.
You were there. You saw it. What did you get? Almost 40% of the vote. That's pretty respectable for somebody who started literally 2.5 months before the election and had very little money. We did good.
Yeah.
So I think, and I didn't listen to anybody, and you know that. I did whatever I wanted. So you know that that's me.
Yeah.
So if you told your listeners, hi, I'm Kathy Antunes, and Frank is really pretty stand-up about what he believes, you can honestly say that because you know that about me.
So,
as for other candidates, Kathy, I can't speak for you. I don't know what they're going to be doing.
I'm giving you the opportunity to distance yourself from some of that.
Stop. Kathy, stop. Don't do that.
How I feel.
Don't do that. I'm my own person, and you know
I
that.
I know you. Okay.
But
so
this
Frank,
has become a Democratic and Republican race. You know that. The Democrats are endorsing the three other candidates.
Uh-huh.
This is the way it is. And we all have to run with it because guess what? We have what? Like 4 weeks left? And there's going to be more bashing and smearing and blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. I know I'm a good person. I know I've worked very, very hard. And I know that when I put my mind to something,
yeah.
I do very, very good at making it happen. And I'm very, very fair with people.
Okay.
Because for you to have embraced me, you and a lot of your friends, that's pretty impressive because I know we don't agree on a lot of ideologies, but you do agree on the fact that I'm a stand-up person. Would you say that? Yes?
Yes,
you can say that. Kathy, come on.
Okay, so hang on. Let's talk about this PAC. So you've got this.
I don't even know who this PAC is.
Hang on. Sarasota Families for Educational Excellence PAC, and that's an Eric Robinson's mm-hmm. accounting address mm-hmm. where they're putting you together with Michelle Posey and Heidi Brandt. Okay, so the other PAC, and there's a video that has come out, which I'm going to ask you about if the information in it. Okay.
Of course you're going to ask me. I would expect nothing
less. Because I have to ask.
Of course.
Okay. So this is a PAC that is called Fair Governance for Florida. And the chairperson is Kay Mathers, mm-hmm. and she is involved with the Democratic Party.
Yes.
It is, when I go to the contributions, $80,000 is coming from the Longboat Key Democratic Club,
mm-hmm.
and then there's some other donors in there, but the bulk of that $85,000 is coming from a political club, and it's I'm not seeing any other PAC. There's one $100 donation from another political committee called Blank PC. So you know, one of the issues with PACs is when the money churns and mm-hmm. you can't tell where it's from.
Right.
So you can tell where this money is from.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good thing regarding transparency. And it's coming from the Longboat Key Democratic Club. In my view, it should be registered with the county because it's active in a county race.
Mm-hmm.
And theoretically, that's what our standards are mm-hmm. supposed to uphold. But unfortunately, these PACs are registering in Tallahassee and are active in local politics. Okay. Now, the substance of what they're putting out, there's something about a bar that you owned mm-hmm. or a nightclub that you owned in New Jersey. And
there being issues. Want to start with those, and then we'll go to the other half of the video?
You go ahead.
All right, tell me. I'll tell you. So I have, in fact, in the video, it has me saying that I was in the nightclub business. Not ashamed of it. I did it for 10 years up in that area.
Uh-huh.
However, they were dance clubs. They were not strip clubs. That's a totally different business.
Okay.
So that's not what they were. Now, the particular one that they have their news article from,
uh-huh.
very simple. It was a nightclub. It was a big place. We had like 700 or 800 people. One night, police came in. It was back in the 80s and 90s. Kids used fake ID. I can guarantee you when the police asked them, what do you think they said? I don't have any ID. So.
This was in the, what years?
I think that was 1990, 89 or 90 that
okay.
happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, so 22 kids got charged for being under the age of 21 and
uh-huh.
drinking. So that's
yeah.
typical. So the city, it was a town, and they work differently than they do down here in Florida. So that town.
And this was Fairview?
Fairview, New Jersey.
Okay.
Yeah. And they were very strict about it. And when that happens, it's a very, very big problem because nobody's going to want to go back for a while. So the place was closed. I have associates and
mm-hmm.
they said, well, we can't, because the strip club thing is something that you just don't go and do. But go-go dancing is a little bit different. Girls are fully clothed. They're on stage. They dance. I thought it was a bad idea. We tried it. I was also in my 20s. I was getting nervous because this was, you know, a serious problem that the place got in trouble.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. So if you look, the article even says go-go. It doesn't say topless or strip. And then it was from April was when the initial incident happened with the minors and then the underage drinking. And then I shut it down because I didn't want to go on like this. I didn't like the idea. And
okay.
Subsequently then had the bankruptcy that was there that they also put on there because there was no way to pay all of that. It was just, it was over.
Yeah.
So I was in my 20s. It was a terrible situation, but I was a young entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And had it not been for that incident with, you know, people, you know, using fake ID, which was pretty much a risk of doing business back then. I'm sure it is now too. Yeah, it was a pretty big hit. But that couple of weeks doesn't define my career in that business. So I'm disappointed that they, if you just look it up, go-go is not the same. But again, back in the 80s and 90s, people knew the difference. Today, people don't.
Well, and go-go dancing was a thing in the
60s. 60s and 70s, yeah.
Really.
Yeah, they
remember
the go-go boots and everything else. So
you're telling me that this was, because I didn't see it say anything about it being a strip club or a topless club. But you're saying that's out there and that that wasn't
right? That's
what
they're saying.
Okay.
But it was, again, it was only a few weeks, because if you look at the dates, April through May, and then it was closed, and that was it.
Okay.
So that shouldn't define 62 years of me being here. I mean, come on.
Okay.
That's not fair.
Yeah. So tell me about the criticism of your business.
Okay, so 20 years of being in Sarasota, I've been involved in businesses.
Mm-hmm.
In businesses, sometimes you have disputes and there's lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, were there 15 lawsuits? Yes. That's there. That's the docket. However, in order to find out the amounts I was being sued for, they'd have to open up every one of those cases. And a responsible person would say, okay, here's how much money Frank owed. Here's how much money that they're saying, the legal fees, you know, all the inflated numbers they put in there, and they came up with their total. But if you look at the final disposition, five of them I countersued and were dismissed because they were not my obligation. Seven of them I paid.
Okay. All right.
There was a foreclosure on an investment property, which in 09, I mean, you know, everybody had issues with that. But I did give the property back. There's no judgment there.
Okay.
And then the second mortgage that was on it, I settled and paid. And then the other one was withdrawn because it wasn't even, they withdrew it on themselves because they realized, I don't know if you remember, they were selling mortgages back and forth between all these different lenders back then. It was kind of a train wreck.
Yeah.
So that's how that happened. So I have a foreclosure, on an investment property, but I did give it back. There's no judgment against me for money owed. The second mortgage paid. I settled with them and paid it.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a single judgment against me. So when somebody says that I have $830,000 in bad debt, that's not true. I don't owe any of that money. I paid it. Plus, I'm in business today. I wouldn't be able to carry, being in business if I had that kind of ridiculousness.
Yeah.
But,
okay.
If you take a court docket, you want to say I had 15 lawsuits, that's true.
Okay.
The evictions that are on there, one of them, I was just a registered agent, so they had to withdraw it. And the other one was I had given the place back, but there was another person on the lease that was fighting with them, and I got dragged into that. But there was still no money owed. They got their place back. So the reason why that bothers me is in 2018, I could have just said, hey, I'll just go bankrupt, forget about it, and walk away from all this. I didn't. I fought the ones that weren't, again, that I felt I was right, and I did win. And I paid them. So for them to take that and spin it that way, it's kind of disheartening because I worked really hard to not be that person that they're labeling me to be. But this is what PACs do.
So, So, you know, I did look at the docket, and I did have a question. I didn't open them all because there's, but there's one that I opened that is Goldman Sachs.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, this was a loan.
It was a business credit line.
Oh, okay.
And
they call it a loan.
Well, I know, but well,
installment loan.
Yeah.
Okay, so business credit line.
It was used for business. So let's say it was.
So let me ask you this.
Yes.
Because the thing that really kind of made me go, whoa, is that the annual percentage rate for this installment loan agreement was 24.74%.
Pretty much what they were doing on credit or credit card, credit business credit lines and so on back then, yes.
Well, okay. See,
why is that a problem? That's what?
Because, like, I do business. Mm-hmm. I'm very conservative. Mm-hmm. You would have to, like, drag me kicking and screaming to sign any kind of a loan with a 25% interest rate.
But you see,
I just wouldn't do it.
So you have to understand that those were used for purchasing goods and then repaying. So is this like
overnight kind of thing? Or
no, not overnight. So in other words, you purchase goods that you're going to sell, and then you sell them, you pay back your credit line, and slowly but surely you don't need it. When I closed the business, obviously that was a problem. There was a balance due on that. So that's what that was.
Okay.
But the interest rate is, look, it's hard for small businesses to get low interest loans. It's just the way it is.
Well,
but the fact is they came after me for it, but it was signed. It was supposed to be a business loan. So therefore, if you look, it was dismissed. I don't owe that money.
Well, what happened was it was dismissed, like neither party showed up.
Well,
for the final.
No, because they said they weren't going to show up, so my lawyer didn't show up, and nobody showed up because they know they weren't going to win, and I was going to wind up suing them back for legal fees.
Okay, and the other question I have is, because you had claimed that the loan was usurious, that's in some of the
Well, no, because they
so
added.
So how do you sign a loan knowing that's the rate and then say it's
usury?
Because
when they added all of their additional fees and late fees and everything else that compounded, that's where my lawyer said it was usury.
Okay.
Because remember how they
then it must have been like 50%.
I don't know what it
huge.
Was, but it went up beyond what would be considered the acceptable, which I believe in Florida is 29 point something percent.
Uh-huh.
Over and above that becomes usurious because you're tacking on fees and late and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
But again, just so you know how a lot of these lenders work, they usually wait a while before they want you to kind of get reestablished, so then they can actually try to sue you for something, which, look, it is what it is. It's the industry.
Okay.
But my lawyer did say that I think that's why they decided to just let it go and the case got dismissed. So if it's dismissed, do I owe the money? If they say I don't, if the court says I don't owe the money, no, I don't.
Okay. Well, you know, I just wanted to give you the opportunity to address
that.
It because it's out there.
Yeah, there's no way to get that back. It's out there forever.
Well, and you know, in fairness, it is like it is on the clerk, Ned, but to hear from you.
What could be said is I was involved in 15 lawsuits that had whatever the total was that was disputed. But to say that I'm a deadbeat and didn't pay that and I still owe that money, that's kind of defamatory to me. I don't like that because that's not the case.
Okay.
And I think you can say you're smart. You read those. There is not a single judgment there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see one, right?
Honestly, have I looked through all of them? But
okay.
I'm going to take you at your word.
They should have looked through all of them.
Because
if there was a judgment, you know what that? Oh, and Frank has judgments again. They didn't say that because it's not the case.
Okay.
Now, does it suck? Yeah, absolutely. I'm not. You know, I went into a business. Unfortunately, you know, things sometimes don't work out. But that's what entrepreneurs do.
Mm-hmm.
We do businesses. Some do well. Some do not.
So what is your business now? What are you
right
doing
now? I'm in the insurance business.
Okay.
I've been in it since 2018, and I do well in that. I take really good care of my clients, and I'm pretty proud of it.
That's good.
So you know, but it's not that type. It's not this big, huge business with lots of inventory. It's a basic, nice practice.
It's a service,
and I love doing
financial
it. Yes.
Service. Yep.
Well, it's not financial. It's insurance service.
Well, I call that financial.
Okay. But it's insurance. I have an insurance license.
Okay. So let me get back because we've got a few minutes. I want to.
Time goes fast. We're having fun.
I know it does, right? Tell me about your thoughts about what happened with Vermilion Education because that was a big issue.
Kathy, I don't know a lot about it, honestly, but I'll tell you what, since you bring it up, I will look into it, but I honestly don't know enough about it at all to talk about it.
Oh, I'll tell you what it was.
I bet you will.
Vermilion? So Sarasota County Schools was contemplating, and this was advocated by Bridget Ziegler, Vermilion Education was the principal of that. It was a curriculum educational.
But Bridge is not going to be here anymore, though.
So I understand.
So,
but this is an important. It was a huge issue recently.
What year was it?
I want to say 2023.
And who was the majority?
About that. Anyway, Vermilion Education is affiliated with Hillsdale College.
Okay.
And just like New College, you know, you've got Richard Corcoran giving keynote addresses at Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College has a particular ideology that people would call perhaps Christian nationalism. Uh-huh. That is, you know, I would say a lot of people would say it's definitely far right of center. And so the Sarasota County School Board was contemplating having Vermilion be an education consultant and pay them, you know, to come into our schools. And the guy who was running it, he was fresh out of whatever educational system, or he had no track record.
Mm-hmm.
So Robin Marinelli voted no. Tim Enos voted no. Tom Edwards voted no. Karen Rose and Bridget Ziegler were on board with it. That's my recollection. And it's a pretty big bellwether test, mm-hmm, for somebody's, you know, issue. Like, I think Ms. Posey would be fine with it.
Okay, so, well, we don't know what Michelle Posey would do. But what I would say is this. It didn't pass, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And two of the three people that voted were Republicans that voted against it.
Yeah.
So doesn't that show you that this can, that what I'm talking about, that we can come together and agree?
Yeah.
I mean, so I think, so you kind of made the argument for me that I know we can do that again. I'm proud of the fact that if they thought it was a bad idea,
yeah,
and they voted along with Tom Edwards and said no, that's a fantastic thing.
Well,
but I'm not going to say that. I don't know anything about it to say if it's a good or bad idea. So I'm not saying. What I'm saying is,
yeah,
that you had a party split, which is what we've been talking about, which is what the big fear everybody has, is that if it's all right, then it's going to be, mm-hmm, 3-2, 3-2, and if it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you that this is something I believe won't happen, and you just basically told me that with a board,
okay,
of 4-1,
I'm going to tell you why.
Well, but let's not, look,
mm-hmm,
it's in the past, but I'm just going to say this. Seriously, but I don't, and you're asking about something I don't know. But
it's a total waste of our time as a community,
but
to be bringing in something so ridiculous.
But they voted no.
Yeah, but my point is,
okay,
it never should have gotten there.
My point is,
why are we wasting our time?
I have to agree. If something's a bad idea, it shouldn't be brought forward. But we don't know it's a bad idea until it's brought forward.
No, that's not true.
Frank, I don't know that idea.
I'm telling you I do.
So, I'm telling you,
this thing never should have gotten as far as it did. It was a total waste of our time.
But it got stopped.
Let me tell you something. As somebody who works very hard for, mm-hmm, nearly two decades now to stop these stupid things, I'm tired of having to stop stupid things. I want people on that dais who are not going to give this stuff the time of day, because it is a distraction,
mm-hmm,
because it is drama.
So what do we do? When somebody brings an idea forward,
yeah,
right? Don't you feel that people need to listen to it before we decide if it's a good or bad idea or not? Seriously, how do you know? Let me rephrase it. How do you know if somebody's going to be bringing an idea to you that's a good or bad idea if we don't give them the opportunity to bring it forward?
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Do you
have a vetting process? Does everything get vetted on the floor?
I think it should be discussed on the floor. That's what the whole purpose of the board meetings are. I think if a board member, and I don't care who it is, if a board member says, hey, I got this really good idea, I'd like to talk about it and bring forward, put it on the agenda, and let people talk. And the idea is, mm-hmm, that as we get community response, you can start to say, wow, maybe this is not such a great idea, and then it dies right there. Or, hey, you know what? It's getting some traction. People like it. Let's look further into it. That is the way you break down a problem. That is the way that you solve a problem.
Yeah.
But
okay.
I just feel that if we follow that particular suit of letting somebody bring something to the table, And if it winds up being, you know, something that is really not good, I think with a board mm-hmm. that is willing to work together, we'll all agree, hey, you know what? Not such a great idea. I know if I brought a, I brought ideas to my board when yeah. I was on it, and sometimes people are like, yeah, Frank, you know, you're off base with that one. I didn't take it personal. I'm like, okay, great. Forget it. Let's move on. That is what you're mm-hmm. supposed to do. So maybe I misspoke when I said it, but I said is that if three people on that board of different ideologies thought it was a bad idea, because I have no idea what that whole thing was about, but if they thought that was a bad idea, case in point, it can be done. And I think going forward, 2026, 2027, this board, whoever they may be, I think can learn from that and move forward and do the right thing. And okay. you know I feel that way. So come on. Seriously. Okay. Seriously.
All right, Frank.
Thank you.
You have the last word.
I do?
So.
Oh, we're almost done. Boy, yeah. time
goes by.
Fast.
How yes. can people find out more about your candidacy?
Just go on my website,
okay.
frankforschoolboard.com. I have my video about the school supply idea. We didn't get to talk about that, but it's a way for parents to not have to pay for school supplies anymore mm-hmm. by the school buying them in bulk. You and I talked
yes.
about that. There's a video on it, and I think that if you check it out, you'll see, because you know my heart's in the right place, or I would not be doing this.
Oh.
So.
Frank, thank you
thank
so
you,
much
Kathy.
For the spirited discussion.
Seriously, I
appreciate
love it. Thank
that,
you for
that
having
you're
me.
Here. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions of hosts.